K-Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome to Mindful Mud. I am Fluina Nickley. I'm your host, and I'm a Zen teacher and a mindfulness instructor. Today on Mindful Mud, I am joined by Devon Sangstarath and Anthony T. Mace. And Anthony is known as T. Both of them are mindfulness teachers with deep experience working with teens. And they were two of the teachers on the Inward Bound Mindfulness Retreat my son Julian attended over New Year's. He came back really touched by the experience, so I wanted to learn more about what makes these retreats so meaningful. So Devon, do you want to get started and just kind of introduce yourself? What brought you to mindfulness? How did you end up here? And a little bit, like, what are you up to?
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. Mm-hmm. All right. So what brought me to mindfulness? I can start there.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So, I started practice pretty early in life, and I really credit my parents. When I was about 16 years old, born and raised in the city of San Francisco, and in high school, I was kind of like hanging out with some kids who were getting in a lot of trouble. And so then I started getting into trouble, and, any middle-class white parents in the Bay Area, they were like, you should try mindfulness as an intervention for, my poor behavior. So me and my drug dealer boyfriend at the time went up for a family day at Spirit Rock. And I remember feeling like, oh, this place isn't for me. But I did feel kind of touched by, and the teacher was Sylvia Boorstein.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember at 16, even kind of noticing her and feeling like she could talk about things that were real, which felt really important to me as a 16-year-old, and hard, but she still had this kind of glint in her eye. And I was like, this person is kind of embodying something that I hadn't ever seen before. And even though I rejected it, I didn't go back when I was in high school. When I was 21, my best friend was murdered, and I was really sent into, a pretty dark place internally, and I didn't want to live and I didn't want to die. And I was struggling, dark night of the soul. And I remembered Sylvia Boorstein, and I remembered the practice. And so on my own would get up every morning and like had a little cushion that I'd sit on my floor. And like that began my daily practice. And I'm 46, almost 47 now. So, it's been a really kind of varied road, but I think because of my own struggle as a teenager, that's actually where I started. And I was working at started doing a lot of work with young people right out of grad school. I got my master's in social work. And so, I've been working with young people for a long time, and was in the Dharma community in the Bay Area. And so when it was called Maya, right? I think Maya was the first iteration of IBME. I was invited to come because I had a practice and also worked with young people in San Francisco public schools. That's a little, that's the headline on how I got to IBME retreats and teaching there. And actually now T and I have co-founded with a group of other people a teaching collective called the Dharma Homies. And that's kind of where I do the majority of my work, but still drop in and do teen work. And Julian was such a pleasure to have on retreat. So I was really excited that we get to meet his mom.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Devon. Sure. It's so interesting how sometimes it's a little drop, right? That we get an experience of mindfulness for a lot of people. I hear this a lot. For me, it was different, but And then we come back to it. I hear that from a lot from my students, like especially kids, like kids who I haven't really paid attention to, right? Mindfulness in schools. I see them like 2 or 3 years later on the street, and they're like, "Guess what? I'm using this stuff." I'm like, "You?" Yeah, so that's really so interesting, that exposure. Yeah. How about tea? Tell me your story. What brought you to mindfulness, if you may?
Good. Yeah, good to be here also, and just to hear Devin's story again. We teach a lot, and when teaching to teens, it's often useful to tell our story, just because we both started as teens, especially. But just in general, being authentic and real, like in Devin's experience with Sylvia, just trying to show that right from the start, like we are real humans. So anyways, having heard Devin's story a bunch, I always love how she tells it each time, and it comes alive really. So for me, similar, just as a teen getting in a lot of trouble, with the, all the things with the drugs and alcohol and kind of criminal behavior type of things, and anger, and I would say anxiety. I don't think I knew at the time, but anger and anxiety and things like that led me to trying to drink and party and cover over some of the challenges so I could have a good time. But the good time didn't quite last or be sustainable enough, so I kind of hit my rock bottom, and tried to stop drinking, but couldn't quite figure it out. Just kept, oh, I should stop, I should stop, and but then I'd fall right back in, and then I stumbled into this class in community college where the teacher suggested that we be quiet for 2 minutes every day. And it was just the most gentle intro. There wasn't much teaching. There wasn't like a big philosophy behind it. He kind of like shared his perspective, but most of it was just the like, just be quiet and check it out. And then he also had his journal a little bit. And so it was the first time I had ever like had a conversation with myself and like had a chance to see like, what is under the hood here? How are these things working? How does this mind and body and thoughts and actions play out? And so I fell in love pretty quick because I was able to understand what was going on with me, and I was able to stop drinking like that. It was pretty quick that this intro allowed me to just turn my life around. And so sobriety, and then my world just expanded. I started listening to more than just Bay Area rap music, and I started listening to Mozart and Paul Simon, and like I just say I started to see color like the rainbow. I came out of my little world, and then I just got thirsty for knowledge and understanding, and especially this meditation stuff. Like, what is this? Which path makes sense for me with the meditation stuff? So I explored all the different versions of contemplative practice, and then landed on Buddhism, and then particularly kind of Theravada Buddhism and Thai Forest Buddhism, and basically it led me to the emerging budding field of secularized Buddhist meditation. So I was a psychologist, researcher at UCSF, and it was in 2004, so it was those early days of research into this stuff. We were one of the first big NIH funded studies of secularized Buddhism, and like I think you were saying in our earlier conversation, Florina, around like they didn't even quite know what to call it yet. Like the scientific consensus didn't know what we were going to call it, but like mindfulness seemed to be what we were going to call it. So then we started calling it mindfulness, and so yeah, then the money started flowing to research and to schools and to all the ways that we see mindfulness all over. And so I kind of just rode that wave, and was invited to do, first it started out as Buddhist meditation for teens through Spirit Rock Meditation Center, and then with all this science backing and the secular mindfulness kind of movement, Inward Bound came through. And then I kind of segued from the Buddhist teen meditation retreats to the Inward Bound secular mindfulness retreats. And so straddling that line of kind of Buddhist world and the secular presentation of it, been doing that for 15 years or so, and mostly with Devin the whole time.
Wonderful. So. And now you're both here. Woohoo!
Yeah.
It's so interesting, these right, how life blesses us into certain things. Like, it might not really feel so comfortable at the beginning. Right. But and then as you say, right, Devin, T, like that going with the wave, right? It's like, see where you end up while making decisions. Okay, I heard you talk about rap and Mozart. So is rap less mindfulness than mindful than Mozart?
I didn't let go of the rap. I just added it to the repertoire.
There you go. You expanded your, there you go.
Right. Exactly.
Just wanted to give a little bit of an idea here.
Thank you. Yeah. Practice of inclusion. We included all for sure.
That's it, right? Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. So for folks who, you know, they have never heard of mindfulness Inward Bound Mindfulness Education, what kind of organization is it? Do you kind of want to, any of you want to just kind of give the listener an idea?
Yes. So you might have heard Devin say IBME. That's what it was called for the first 15 years. And they did a little branding remix to where, I don't remember who made a decision, somebody marketing person, but they now they're trying to stick with Inward Bound. So it's, you might hear us say it both, but it was a cute name. IBME, you know, it was about being yourself. IBME.
I love that way better too. That's what I thought. And I was like, wait, what is that other thing? Is that the same thing? I got all confused first. Yeah. I love IBME too.
Right. Yeah. And so Inward Bound, also cute. It's a play on, like, there's a Outward Bound is an organization that does a bunch of going out in the wilderness and connecting out there. And so Inward Bound is an organization that does teen retreats where it's about going into the inner world also, you know. And the truth is we've done at Inward Bound, we've done wilderness retreats also. So wilderness mindfulness retreats. So it is about Outward Bound and Inward Bound at the same time. And then I guess your question was about the organization. Yeah, the main focus of it, I think it separates itself from other mindfulness with youth programs in that it is one that it's, adolescent focused. So it's not for elementary school. It's age 15 to 19 mostly, but then also kind of includes young adults. And so college age is also included in their mission. And then the main distinction is that it's like in-depth mindfulness practice. And so what you see a lot is mindfulness in schools, and you get little samplers and maybe 3 minutes of meditation and mindfulness, or maybe 15 at the most. And on these retreats, we don't pull any punches. We don't have, what do they call it? Soft gloves or something. We let them go deep like we would with adults. We let them have hours of meditation and hours of silence and noble silence, like you might find on a meditation retreat for adults. And so the depth that they can explore is what really is remarkable about these teen retreats. And then, you know, we might get in more of the nuances of how that's done, because you can't, you don't just drop teens into a silent retreat for 5 days and expect that to work. I think they did try that the first year, and it didn't quite work, and quickly adapted the model. So now it's quite different.
I will also add that one of the pieces that that Inward Bound is doing is also working with youth serving adults. So providing like programs, classes, day longs and stuff like that for adults who work with teens to be able to kind of like support their mindfulness practice, and therefore support young people in their growth and development. Yeah.
Right. So both teen retreats and also support for probably parents, right? And and folks who work with, yeah.
Yeah.
So you would say the real unique thing about IBME retreats, Inward Bound retreats, are that they are long and that they are going into depth.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I find that so very, very, very important in these days where, you know, there is always a little bit of everything. And it's almost like with adolescents, sometimes we are under, in my opinion, in my view, we're underestimating
yes, yes.
them so much. And they are ready for so much depth and so yeah. much going in, if in the right safe container.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you kind of explained why you ended up working with teens, right? You both had went through the ringers during the teens, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm signing up right there with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fitting right in for sure. It's the same reason what brought me to the whole practice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. 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 So, but what is it that you actually, I mean, if you do, what is it that makes it fun or that you love about adolescents and teens? Any of you?
Yeah. Well, I could tell you what sold me at first, which was, you know, I was scared of the idea of leadership. So when I was invited to come on a teen retreat, I was like, oh God, you want me to be a leader? Like I thought leaders, that just was a bad word for me. I didn't have adults that were like thoughtful and kind. I thought, yeah, I thought that meant just domination and control or something like that. And so I kind of reluctantly stepped in based on some advice from friends and mentors that I should try it out. And then when I saw what was being done on these team retreats, as far as leadership goes, it was like, oh, wow, these people are just being authentic and caring and kind of living their practice of presence and care. And it kind of blew my mind. I was like, oh, this is leadership. I could do this. I'm just going to keep signing up for this. I still don't know what I'm doing. I have been afraid of leadership my whole life. I didn't have much leadership experience under my belt. So I just slowly I would show up to every retreat I could and just be a volunteer mentor that was kind of wasn't much expected of me, you know, and I got to just see it and watch from people who had kind of mastered this form. And I never looked back. I just did every single retreat since then. And that was probably 18 years ago or something like that now. And so, and what keeps me coming is that, you know, what it takes to work with teens is just being real. And so building that muscle of authenticity is just a win-win, you know, I enjoy it. And then because they don't put up with BS. And so I get challenged to be more real in places that I might not, always, or challenged to like be playful where I may have like tucked that away in childhood to try to be an adult. You know, it brings it out, like the natural human playfulness and vulnerability and, just kind of that ability to be connected that teens show, that kind of like willingness to just be real with each other. And there's no facade of trying to be a professional or try to show up a way that looks managed or something like that. You know, of course the teens are trying to, you know, they're building their identities and things like that. So it's not all easy, but there is something that's called from us as leaders to just be, to be real and to be caring. And so it feels like a good practice for me. And I think maybe one more thing I'll add is just that, like you said, that we let the teens go deep. And when you see that, it is just, it's just touching to see when teens find themselves and they get over some limiting story that they had, that this allows them to be themselves. You know that this is going to have ripples for decades, and for, you know, it's going to, it gives you kind of hope for the world to see this, this healing and transformation and empowerment that can happen. Yeah.
Thank you, T. Yeah. It's incredible working with adolescents. It's just, yeah. How about for you, Devin? I know you're kind of moving away a little bit from the teen work, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, but you have done a lot of it. So what is it that tickles you working with teens or used to?
Yeah. I will say that having worked 10 years as a high school social worker in San Francisco public schools really burnt me out. So my answer for what I enjoy about working with teens is a little bit more of a reach, not because I don't love teens, but because I think I'm working on a level of kind of like recuperating from some pretty intense 10 years of working with a lot of high intensity and trauma. And so my answer may be a little bit different than T's, and also to maybe a little bit more of a reach into historically what I loved. And yeah, I think authentically what I really enjoyed was like the way that young people are discovering themselves. Like the world is their oyster. And so in these retreats, in particular, if there was enough safety, they could look inside and begin to sort of like be fascinated and delighted and excited about like these identities that were coming to the surface about who they were and what they believed and how they wanted to live their beliefs in the world. And then too, like the way that in sort of softening the like too cool for school, which not all of them come in with, but some of them do. I certainly did. That like essentially like there's a way that like in sort of softening that there's an awakening to this beautiful way that connection is available with the adults that are on the retreat, with other teens. And, you know, I think so there's this like, yeah, epidemic of like feeling like alone and lonely because cool, you know, is valued at the highest. And so like, there's not a lot of knowing how to drop in. And it feels like these retreats gives the teens an opportunity to kind of drop those masks and really connect with themselves and each other. Yeah.
That craving for connection, I feel like it's on all levels. It's in each, like not just adolescents, it's adults.
Yeah, that's right.
And we have to again learn, right, yeah, to come back to that. I just had my last guest here was a eco-psychologist, Hannah Nielsen, and we talked a lot about that work of connection and community and how we need that like so desperately, especially in these times. And I'm really glad you're bringing that up. And that takes time, and it takes vulnerability, and it takes time to develop. It takes trust. And so can you kind of describe perhaps a little bit, because some people might listen here is like, how do you bring teens to be vulnerable with each other?
Yeah, sure.
How in the world are you going to do that? Right.
My
teen just comes home and is like, I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah. That's right.
Right. So how do you create that safe container?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could talk specifically about how we do it on retreat.
That would be sweet.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I was like, different answer at home.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Or perhaps both. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I will say for first, the on retreat. So on retreat, what we do, and, you know, T mentioned this kind of at the beginning, like we tell our stories. And it's a lot of times like the vulnerable sharing from the front of the room and like the detail with which we're willing to talk about these struggles, role models, one that maybe interactions that teens have never had with adults, where adults are really talking about the way that, you know, like they struggled and suffered and felt pain. And because, you know, I think about the first noble truth, right, in Buddhism, you know, like that life contains suffering, because probably most of the teens are suffering over something. There's a way that like something relaxes. It's like my reality is being reflected here. Someone spoke words that made me feel like, oh, I'm not the only one who's suffering or who may be struggling. And so we role model it, and then we give them an opportunity to practice it. So, you know, T was mentioning, like, we drop, you know, like we have like long periods of noble silence and long periods of practice. So we give them space to connect with themselves. And then two times a day, we meet in what's called a small group. And it's usually facilitated by two of the adults that are, you know, I think we have like 12 adults on a retreat or however many numbers, to make sure that it's a really good ratio between the teens and adults. And so two adults will facilitate a group of like 5 to 6 teens. And, you know, we do games. We do relational mindfulness games, you know, that might, you know, for a prompt might be, you know, if we really knew you, what would we know about you? Or, you know, what's been on your mind lately? And then a second round of like, what's been on your heart lately? So we actually have this time where everyone, including the adults, will have an opportunity to share. And like slowly but surely, at the level of sort of, you know, pacing with trust and, yeah, like we kind of walk them into what it might be like to practice that same vulnerability that we've been, yeah, attempting to role model from the front of the room. And then they have free time where they get to color and play. And, you know, so it's like, it, you know, if you think about it, like, you know, it's like, so almost like a wave, you know, like it's like, a, you know, like there's like the intensity maybe of like more vulnerable sharing. And then that intensity drops down into like coloring and hanging out. And then we go into a practice period, and then it drops down into dinner time where everybody's, you know, like, listening to music. And so it really doesn't kind of keep them on the fire for too long, but rather allows them to dip their toe in and experience it, and then hopefully be able to kind of thread that into the other parts of the retreat.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Thanks, Devin. Do you have anything to add, T?
If I just say, you'd be surprised how fast this process can be as you, you know, that's an art. Like that's what Devin and I do in Inward Bound and other places is train folks how to hold the space, how to create the container, and how, like, that art of like, which question do you ask when? You can't just start off and be like, what's on your heart? You know, and you can't just play games and expect them to go somewhere. You can't push them to vulnerability. You know, it's an art and a delicate kind of balance. But once you kind of got it and you can set up that container well and actually be authentic and real, we're not trying to push them to change or even to push them to be vulnerable. We're creating the conditions where there's safety. They know that we care and we're going to hold that boundary and we're going to be real and we're going to see what happens. And so we'll architect, you know, some things thoughtfully just to meet them at where we know they are and where we think they are. And we meet them and we see what's actually here, but you'd be surprised how quick, you know, within an hour, what changes, within a day, what changes, within a couple of days, the amount of readiness to connect and be real and understand themselves and the world and connect with nature outside and inside. Yeah, when the conditions are right. Because like I said, there's not all those thick layers of decades of putting things on that adults have. So it is pretty quick and beautiful.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. I can imagine it. So I really like what you said, both of you. Like, there's a certain technique, right? What you're doing, but actually, a lot of creating safe space is how you show up, right? It's the presence that, and we have to have experienced that to know, right?
Yes,
Yeah.
yes.
So it's yes, there is a technique to it, and there is mostly a presence that you, that's why holding space is the right word, right? Because you are holding that space. And I realized that with working with adults and with kids, that's really the most crucial of everything. Doesn't even matter what we're saying and doing, but
Yes.
how do I show up? Where's my presence? Where's my authenticity in the room? Makes
Yeah.
all the difference in the world.
Yeah. So that's maybe one piece I would add on that is that that's another thing that distinguishes Inward Bound is that the criteria to be a leader on the retreat, you know, there's like three main teachers that kind of hold the whole staff and team, is pretty, it's pretty high as far as like the amount of the qualities you need to show, including a depth of experience in these kind of silent retreat meditation experiences and the self-understanding and the ability to be authentic and adapt and not get caught up in your own needs and control or whatever ego stuff that might come up. And so the leadership on these retreats can embody all this stuff, let alone, you know, has the little techniques and tips and experience to make the magic happen.
Yeah, you have kind of mentioned a little bit the structure of these teen retreats. So it's 5 days. How big of a number do you normally kind of have?
Well, yeah, it's usually between maybe 20 and 40 teens and about 12 to 15 adult staff. And
And so they are all over the country, right?
They are we they're it's gone through waves where it's, you know, the funding flows help support this, you know, because Inward Bound has a policy of no one turned away for lack of funds, and so there's the scholarship offers are big, and so they don't really quite make profits at this point, so but at some points there was enough energy where there was, yeah, maybe a dozen retreats in the States and one or two abroad. I think UK was also doing an Inward Bound thing. And there would be the wilderness-based retreats with the backpacking, and there would be kind of nature-based that would be out kind of in one campsite where people would launch out and do little day trips to connect with nature. And then the main kind of bread and butter of Inward Bound was these residential retreats that would be at something like a meditation center. It's a meditation hall and everything like that.
And would you call these retreats secular?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Introducing the practice. Yeah.
Introducing the practice. And then with the spirit of authenticity, the teachers, if they're speaking that about their experience, you know, they're gonna be real if they come from a Buddhist tradition, and that's what has guided their heart for decades, they're going to be able to speak to that. But the main thing guiding what they want to say is what's going to be accessible to these teens, what's going to make sense. We want it to land and make it give them the gift of this practice and find ways for them to make it their own. And so we're not going to be using jargon from the Buddhist world, and if we happen to, we'll make sure to explain it in a way that is secular and will reach the most people.
Yeah, I find it important so it's not turned into something that is only accessible for a certain part of group, right? So it's inclusive. So what hasn't really come out much, and I think it's a big deal these days, you're not allowing any technology, right? So tech is put away. So how is that going? Is there resist? I mean, what's the process there? Tell me about it.
I mean, you know, they before they sign up for the retreat, there's an understanding that they won't be having their cell phones, that that's like a communication on the front end. So by the time they come to retreat, and it's almost one of the first things they do, you know, like, you know, they will pull up either with their families or, you know, like in a shuttle from the airport, and they get in a little line and they do their check-in, and then they are, like offered to or invited to give up their cell phones. And I have not seen anyone rage about it or even get really upset because my guess is because we've done a good job like making it so that it's not a surprise. So they know in advance to let their friends and family know. Sometimes there's like a last text or two that needs to get sent out. And maybe every once in a while, and I think I've been doing this for about 15 years, every once in a while, there'll be someone who has like a burner phone or something like that, which just means that like it's not their main cell phone. They turned in their main cell phone. And usually that gets handed in a couple days afterwards anyway. But yeah, they've essentially, in signing up for the retreat, made the commitment not to use their cell phones. And so it's really sweet to see what happens when they get really, they have to be present with each other and in whatever they're doing because they don't have a phone.
You feel like it can also be a certain relief after a while?
I think so.
Or is that the wrong word?
No, I mean, I think they're so immersed. Yeah, it does. Maybe it's not sort of like so conscious as like, wow, this feels like a relief. Although maybe I've heard people say that. Yeah. They're just there. They're there. I'm curious, T. I mean, you probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking how there's a funny thing that they will often credit that as almost like the biggest thing of the retreat is letting go of their phones. And even but before cell phones were a big thing, the teens would credit something else. And so they'd be, oh, it's so good to just be out in nature. And meanwhile, us staff, we've been working our butts off teaching them the depth of these practices. From our perspective, they are doing deep work of like understanding their minds and how to aim their attention and open their heart. And there's all this stuff we're offering them and we see it land. It is like clearly transformational. And then the last day they'd be like, oh, what I'm taking away from this is I just love being out in nature. I can't believe how beautiful this is. And, or they're, you know, I just being away from my cell phone, such a huge difference from my daily life. This was, that was the biggest impact I had was this retreat. I was able to be away from my phone. And we're like, are you kidding me? All that work we've done, all we had to do was take away your phone.
And feed you and give you a bed and have some nature out there.
Yeah. I would love to do like, some double blind study where you just let people have no phone and be out in nature, compare it to a mindfulness retreat and see what the outcomes are. They may say it's the same, but I don't believe it. Hmm.
Could it be that it's just also really, I mean, they might have been just introduced to that language of the inner world, right? And perhaps they don't really have the words yet to really explain that process, right?
Right, you're right. Because you see it when they come and repeat, you know, they come multiple times, then they start to get it, you know, then it takes some time. That's what I think takes some time, you're right. It's like that, the self-understanding, understanding the process of what's actually happening may take some years of practice.
And building the language around it for kids. I mean, some kids might have been exposed to it, but before, right, or are repeating to come back. So you guys have a lot of people who come back like year after year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been awesome to see that. At this point, we have, you know, we've done some work to work with young adults because once they age out of teen retreat, you know, you turn 20, 21, you can't come back. And so that's been the hardest thing for me to watch is to see these teens who have come to, you know, 5 or 10 retreats. It's their I don't know what to call it, their spiritual home, their community might be a better way to say it. And then they're just not allowed, and there's no retreats for them anymore. And their only option maybe is to go to a silent retreat somewhere where they don't know anybody. And so working with the young adult population to try to keep them connected to each other, to this kind of practice that we've been doing, has been important to me. And Inward Bound has not always had the ability to make that happen, again, because of the funding. It's like, it does seem like people want to fund teenagers, but then when it comes to young adults, there's a little less. They're kind of, they go off to college, or, you know, they expect parents to pay, or for the young adults to pay themselves. And so it's like this little lost little age range. And so it's been sweet to be able to help carry them over time. Sometimes it's just me being like, let's all meet in the park and get you guys connected and share each other's phone numbers, and like trying to help them build that community for themselves. And what's been beautiful is that now we've had someone who was a teen at 16, did her first retreat, did as many as she could until she aged out, did some of the young adult stuff with us, and now is 27, 28 years old and is one of the adult staff on Teen Retreat. And that's been like really beautiful to see that they really fall in love with it. Some of the teens, you know, they travel to Thailand to go study deep with Buddhism, and to see them make it their life has just been, yeah, invaluable.
I mean, look at the three of us, kind of what happened to us, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like, it can happen. If an inner flame that's been there gets ignited, there is no stopping it, right?
Mm.
Yeah. And for some kids, it's landing, and it can be really what can make it their life. And for other kids, is they take the tools and use it, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what we want. Yeah. For sure. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I find working with young adults, adolescents, so rewarding in a way, or I don't know if rewarding, but like that connection, that importance I feel, is because it can be such a lost time in the way of society. Things, they're all crazy, you know, nobody can really approach them. And there's something really lost in the beauty, as you just right said, there can be such an incredible power in that time that gets not nurtured and not fed. And explaining adolescents, teens, how their nervous system works, right? What's actually happening from a scientific point of view in their brains during that time, why their mood swings are so out of nowhere and insane, why anxiety is raging, right? And as you said, right, we as adults as well, like if we can share, hey, this is in a way normal. This is not your fault. Mm-hmm. This is your nervous system doing something to try to protect you, to try to deal with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It can shift the kid's life completely.
Mm-hmm.
And then you give in some tools.
Yeah.
Try this, right? Something simple.
Yeah.
Is that kind of your experience as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, for adults, for us too, right?
Really.
It's a constant ongoing thing.
Right.
Yeah. As a teacher, with adults and teens, often my job is just normalizing people's experience.
Yeah.
Goes a long way.
Yeah. Goes a long way.
Yeah.
We're all in this. Yeah. And also knowing that we have strength to be with it. Yeah. Yeah. So what about your own practices? I know you're both very active. You mentioned the Dharma Homies. Let's talk about the Dharma Homies. Tell us about what is that group about? Who is it for? How can people jump in? Like,
Yeah. Happy to. So the Dharma Homies, actually, we started as a Buddhist book club, and it was T, myself, Enrique Collazo, who's also a part of the Dharma Homies teaching collective, and a couple other folks. And the way, and so we would meet together about every other week or once a month, and like we would text this kind of, you know, like the text the group, and it was like, hey homies, are we meeting? And then it's sort of like, hey Dharma homies, and then it just sort of like became what we were calling ourselves. And and there was a certain point where kind of the spiritual home that we where we had all met, which was through the Dharma punks, kind of imploded, and we were all at a point where we had started, you know, doing offerings, and very soon after Dharma punks imploded, the pandemic and the lockdown began. And so about like a week after, maybe it was even less than that, like 4 days after the lockdown began, T and I, actually maybe it was 2 days before the lockdown or after the lockdown, T and I had planned to do an online, to do a in-person day long for people in the Bay Area. And we were like, okay, well, I guess the lockdown's happening, so we'll do it on Zoom. And then I think, you know, people were really appreciative of it. And maybe 2 days after that, we started Morning Mindfulness, which has been going for 7 days a week since March 14th, 2020. And so we are celebrating 6 years of 7 days a week in,
3 days.
And so actually we're going to have a day long for, folks who want to join to celebrate. Actually, it's going to be a half day retreat. But, you know, the Dharma Homies really has taken so much from our work at Inward Bound using relational mindfulness. So we oftentimes, our offerings will, you know, begin with sort of a solo mindfulness, kind of like guided meditation, and then move into relationality. Because, you know, to the point of what kind of we've been talking about for, you know, this time together is that, like, just like teens, adults have been socialized in this world where, you know, connection feels hard to find. There's some brokenness around it. We want it, but we don't know how to do it. It's deeply soothing to the nervous system, but hard to figure out how to get there on your own. And so, you know, our community is one where we really center this idea that our mindfulness practice is actually a really key support in connection. And so, so our work really aims to include that as a part of what we offer. And yeah, I mean, we're a teaching collective that really leans into inclusivity. And the majority of our teachers are BIPOC, except for myself and one other person. A lot of our teachers identify as queer, whether that means just like, you know, sexual orientation or gender identity. And we really work to create a space where, our population feels safe and loved and celebrated, and because of that, because of our representation and our teachers, our community is that, but also not limited to that. T, what do you want to say about
that?
Thank
you, Devin.
Yeah, for sure. T and I kind of kicked it off, but
isn't it interesting what the pandemic did?
Oh my gosh.
I know. Yeah, it's like, I can relate.
Headed in that direction, but yeah, it did something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have 10 of us teachers in the Dharma Homies Teacher Collective now, and all of us actually have Inward Bound experience. And so what it does for one's practice, working with the teens in that format that we do with teens, the relational mindfulness and then the silence and then relational and silence and authenticity weaves throughout, it wakes up something special, you know, in one's just way of being. And so that's the thing. Oh, I was going to say, Devin, when I think of you, of like what brings you to teen retreat, what you said many times is it's the adult staff that work with the teens.
You're right.
In addition to the teen stuff, but also it's my story too. And a lot of people I talk to, it's like, this is, we meet our best friends here. The kind of people who are going to show up for this kind of work. And often it's you start out as a volunteer. So you're taking a week off to just give and give and what it does to you when you do these practices. And so we spend the, you know, we spend the week doing these practices with the teens, but then at nighttime, put the teens to bed and we go back to our little adult quarters and we're like, let's do some of those games that we were doing with those teens. Let's connect in these ways with mindfulness. And oh man, we fall in love with it. So then of course, me and Devin, having loved these practices, we get invited to these meditation communities that have been going for decades with people who are in their 60s and 70s oftentimes, you know, and they're like, can you come teach us Dharma? And we're like, yeah, we'll show you what we got. And we will like invite them into, how Devin said so beautifully, God, I'm so glad this is being recorded on a podcast, of like the connection that people so deeply want. And it's just hard to just create it out of nowhere, how to find it. You don't just walk down the street and do this with strangers or even with your best friends. It's hard to like just drop in the way you might want to. And the way that these particular forms and structures and safety that we can create invites people to open in the ways that they so deeply want to. And so we may see a little resistance and we try to honor that. And we let people choose into the relational mindfulness. But once they've chosen in, you know, an hour later, they're often like, oh man, I was so nervous going into this, but oh my God, I cannot believe, wow, this is really important work. Thank you for bringing this to our like little space, sacred space, but kind of isolated, kind of disconnected space. Thank you for letting us be the connected humans that we know we are, you know?
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, I'm so glad what you're sharing. Two things come to my mind. One is that adolescents are brutal teachers. Right. In the way of that authenticity, you have to show it. Otherwise, they know you are BS. Right. Yeah. They're not going for it. Yeah. It's what I love about that age. Right. Because it puts me right on the spot. Like, I know exactly, am I there? Am I not there? Right.
Yes.
And then you have that training that you receive from the adolescents, right, from the teens. And you can bring that into the adult kind of work. Right. Oh. How beautiful is that? The other thing that comes to mind is, oh, so many things, but again, that connection, we can not underestimate what also biologically, right, what happens. And our nervous system knows what it means to be really connected.
Yeah.
And everything that's happening on the social media level, on all that, that's not feeding that part at all. Folks think, right, that's what they know, they need the connection, so they go on social media and somewhere there's a void and somehow you can't get away from it because you're like, eventually I will feel it, but you don't, right? And then suddenly you do something like Dharma Homies or you go and sit around a fire with people, or you go dance with a group, or you go to a song, go meditate, whatever you do, right? That space is actually valued and given. It changed. It's like we're coming home.
Yeah, that's right. That's
right.
Yeah.
So just to finish up, we have a couple more minutes here. Quick, how can folks find out about both of you? Perhaps quick the website about Inward Bound. I'm sorry that went fast. I'm just realizing we have like two more minutes.
Oh, good. Yeah. So Inward Bound, actually.
.org. I mean, Inward Bound, they recently changed it and rebrand. So Inward Bound. Now it's called InwardBoundMind.org. All one word. InwardBoundMind.org.
All right.
Yeah.
And then
you can,
and
so you can file a complaint there if you'd rather have it say ibme.org. Like it used to be.
I should do that too. Like that. I'm all disappointed about it.
But it's still the same magic, inwardboundmind.org. And then for your inner teen, If you want to come to dharmahomies.com, that's dharmahomies.com. And we have daily programming, in-person retreats, online retreats, weekend retreats, week-long retreats, 6-week class series, all sorts of things like that. And yeah, we didn't even get to get into the little practices we do, but we, for adults too, try to make it as accessible as possible. Trauma-informed. A lot of people come who have a depth of practice, but maybe they've lost their connection to practice because silence doesn't work for them, or they don't, you know, they don't respond to silent retreat. We do some gentle guidance, some ease. We make it okay to move and stretch and laugh and drink water and have your pets. And it's an easeful entryway back in if you want to re-fall in love with the practice. And it's also good for beginners who want to just, who don't, have never meditated and they want to just try it and they don't think they can. I think we hold that line pretty well.
Yeah. What an offering. Yeah, do you want to add, Devin?
Yeah, you know, I'm appreciating that T mentioned the trauma-informed. So a lot of the Dharma homies are therapists, including me, but the trauma-informed piece feels really important. In my own story, having experienced something really traumatic and having practice change in a big way. And one of the things that people will say when we guide practice is, wow, you know, focusing on the breath has always been really hard, and the way that you all are teaching makes this feel accessible. And I think that there are a lot of people when practice is taught just as sort of like awareness of the breath and the body, there's a lot of people who it can miss because of their nervous system activation level, and who sort of walk away going, oh, well, I guess this practice isn't for me. And so, you know, as a trauma survivor and someone who practices mindfulness, that feels like a really important piece to be able to share about how we offer practice that can make it accessible to people who maybe initially felt like it was not. I feel like I got to help create something that my nervous system really needed. And so it's really sweet to be able to share that with other people.
Mm-hmm. And check us out on YouTube. If you don't want to come live, just check it out and listen
YouTube.
Oh, YouTube too. Dharma homies, go on YouTube. Check them out just to get your toes in there. Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad we talked about the trauma informed. It's a real, real important piece, I feel like, in this world to make it accessible for everybody. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, yes. T and Devin. Really a pleasure.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.